Welcome to the Workplace Wellbeing Podcast, the podcast that looks at the best practices of organisations that care about their people, whilst keeping an eye on the growing wellbeing space. The Workplace Wellbeing Podcast is sponsored by the WorkTech Group, which offers a range of cloud-based software solutions that have a positive impact on employee wellbeing. The group companies are Fast PAYE, a financial wellbeing tool, Solved by AI, which builds artificial intelligence-powered tools that can make a real difference for your workforce, and ShopWorks, which makes scheduling and time and attendance solutions that will help both efficiency and morale. You can find out more at worktechgroup.com.
Hi, I'm Ian Hogg, the chairman of the WorkTech Group, and until very recently, the host of the Workplace Wellbeing Podcast. We recently published our Workplace Wellbeing book, done as a podcast, in 2 episodes and 12 chapters. Each chapter includes clips from the best conversations on the relevant subject with our guests from over 50 podcast episodes. To make it easier to listen to, we decided to break out the 12 chapters into individual episodes so that you can listen to the whole Workplace Wellbeing book, done as a podcast, a few minutes at a time. Here is another chapter, but you can of course listen to the whole book in two parts, or hear the original recordings from the over 50 that we have produced. Welcome back as we start Chapter 3, which covers discovery and establishing a wellbeing strategy. Over the last 50 episodes, I've heard many versions of a sentiment which went something like this: Friday yoga and some free fruit isn't a wellbeing strategy. When I started to speak to guests about wellbeing strategy, the two themes that emerged were: one, many companies didn't have a strategy, they just had free fruit and yoga, and two, the need to do some investigation work during a discovery phase before you settled on a strategy. Several of our guests discussed the steps needed to establish this strategy, which always started with asking colleagues their point of view and finding out what the wellbeing issues were. Once you knew what the issues were, coming up with strategies to improve them was relatively easy. This was called the discovery phase and often involved surveys and workshops. In episode 19 of season 1, I spoke to Sue Jauncey, a psychologist with a forensic background, who began a career working across the Australian prison system. Sue is the CEO of Apollon, which is a software as a service culture tech platform. Sue explained that just asking questions and doing surveys wasn't enough. You had to have a methodology to get the right answers.
Sure. Look, you just have to look in hindsight as to what's been going on, Ian, and stress and anxiety have been on the rise. So all of the ways that we have been currently managing workforce issues, if you like, we got to a point where people were wanting, or leaders were wanting, to investigate what made the workforce happy. And so we were looking at different various surveys and forms and things that we would get views and opinions from the workforce to see what it was that had them feeling more happier and job satisfied in the workplace, and therefore they'd be able to focus on, you know, better productivity and what they were doing. But a lot of the management models that we have been, is management models. But we haven't really stood back and understood what does work for individuals in terms of well-being. And like, as an example, a child is going to tell you that they want to have a chocolate biscuit 5 minutes before dinner because they need that and they want that. But it's not actually what is good for them. So sometimes we think we know what we want, but that doesn't mean it's good for us. So when we look at the management or the workforce management types of tools that we've been using to evaluate workplace satisfaction, what we've done is we've asked a lot of views and opinions of people and questions, and we've seen over the last 2 decades the rise of what we call personalization. And personalization is when we see everything through the world through the lens of how is it going to impact me. And so when we're looking at that in terms of how is the world going to impact me, we can't actually see what's in the best interests of the organization. We personalize things. So you hear things in the workforce like, why wasn't I invited to that meeting? I should have got that opportunity for promotion. Why did they not agree with my view and opinion? They must think that I'm not good enough if they haven't taken on my view and opinion. And then, of course, when we were running engagement surveys across the world, engagement surveys were asking individuals, are you happy with the communication? Are you happy with your training opportunities? Are you happy with your management? And it was all about what the individual was happy with. Now, you'd go into organisations and the executive would say, hey, look, we're doing fine. We've got an 85% engagement survey result. But when you went down and spoke with the employees themselves or the staff themselves, they would say, I don't know why we do this, because they ask our view and opinion and nothing ever changes. And, of course, we know billions of dollars have been invested over the last, you know, decades where there have been no real change in behaviour or performance as a result of all of these surveys being rolled out. But what we have seen, Ian, is a continued rising of stress and anxiety in the workplace. So more stress relief work, stress and anxiety. So whatever it is the organisations have been doing to manage their workforce has done nothing to reduce the levels of stress and anxiety. And in fact, it has only served to increase. Does that make sense?
The use of technology and apps in particular to gather information and use it to make decisions on wellbeing strategy came up often, possibly because, like us at Fast PAYE, some of our guests had apps to sell. Episode 4, Darren Laverty was talking about using his app to develop a financial wellbeing strategy, and it was typical of the approach recommended by a lot of our guests and could easily apply to any of the other key areas of wellbeing.
Yeah, so I've got a financial wellbeing assessment tool. It's designed in America. They class it over there as the gold standard of financial wellbeing assessment. It takes less than 1 minute to complete. It's anonymous. And what it does, it produces a report for employees if they answer, on a scale of 1 to 10, 8 questions. It's been designed by 2 universities in the States and is backed by the Personal Finance Employee Education Foundation. And also one of the lecturers who's a trustee on that foundation, he's currently come from America, he's now at Oxford University. And I've got the intellectual property rights in the UK to promote it. If an employee completes it, they get a financial wellbeing assessment, a score. We need to better measure it, score, and they get a report with a recommended action plan. Now, it's a bit of a blunt instrument, to be honest, but you know, it's depending on their level of stress that they're under and their life stage, it will give them some pointers. But it's not really about that. That's what gets the employees to do it.
And what sort of questions, like, you know, do you use too much money on an overdraft, or is it that sort of question? Or I don't want to know the secrets, just a bit of an overview, really.
It's more feelings based, because what you can't do, fine, you know, people don't want to divulge their personal situation. How do you feel about your financial situation? You know, there is one of the questions, and they can score 1 to 10.
And gotcha.
And they do that 8 times and take an average, and then that's where they sit. The employer gets corporate data. Now, they don't need to know names, but they can see the corporate score. Is that above or below average? Let's break it down demographically. Let's look at salary ranges. Let's look at locations. Let's look at age ranges. And what it enables an employer to do is to have a score, so they have a benchmark to improve upon later to show that they've actually improved the financial well-being of the workforce, to show a return on investment for time and effort spent. But then the other thing is they can strategically pinpoint where the highest levels of stress sit right inside their organisation right now. And, you know, budgets are low at the minute, tight. Budgets are tight. You know, people are struggling on time. The problem's got bigger. We haven't got time to waste. We haven't got money to waste. So if we could be absolutely strategic and know where the problems are, tackle them first, you're going to have the biggest improvement in financial well-being the quickest, rather than what most companies are doing. They take a blanket approach and hope for the best, and then get frustrated when it doesn't actually work, which it doesn't all too often.
We spoke to quite a few wellbeing consultants about best practices and how they approach client engagements. In episode 14 of the second series, I discussed a typical client profile with Davina Ramkissen, and she went on to discuss the steps in setting a strategy, starting with discovery. Davina is Health and Wellbeing Director at Zevo Health, and she leads a team of psychologists and experts who help companies establish wellbeing strategies.
Our typical client is really interesting because it doesn't really exist in terms of we hear this a lot, it's never one size fits all. So what we always do is we try and, obviously this is budget dependent, and employers and organizations are at different phases of where they're at with their wellbeing strategy and their investment into it. But what we always say is, like, let's start at the very beginning with a needs analysis. And let's understand the well-being of your organization so that we can design interventions to suit the different ways in which you work and places that people work. And we can base it on data. So this is really important because when it comes to organizations, we have to take the psychological models and apply them in a business case, business case format, so that we can bring all the senior leadership team with us, whether it's a board of directors, whether it's the management and employees. We're trying to reach so many different levels. And so the communication has to be right. Doing that needs analysis first sets us all out on the same page. We're looking at the data, both quantitative and qualitative, to understand what are the priorities that are coming through from the workforce and where there might be potential differences. For example, if we're working with a global company, their APAC region might have vastly different needs to the EMEA team. So it's important to pull out some of those differences and then tailor the approach to suit the needs. So as you mentioned, construction workers, you know, the thing that is important to note there is access. They're not necessarily going to have email addresses or be logging onto a computer every day. So you have to think around, well, how do we reach those people? And if we can't get to them in their working day, how do we get creative? How do we ensure that they have access to the support that their company is providing for them?
The Workplace Wellbeing Podcast is sponsored by the WorkTech Group, which offers a range of cloud-based software solutions that have a positive impact on employee wellbeing. The group companies are Fast PAYE, a financial wellbeing tool, Solved by AI, which builds artificial intelligence-powered tools that can make a real difference for your workforce, and ShopWorks, which makes scheduling and time and attendance solutions that will help both efficiency and morale. You can find out more at worktechgroup.com.